Winged. Nay, that is what they need, for they feed upon your pleasure and your terror and your pain. They want you to love them. It makes that final moment of betrayal sweeter. They must come to you in the flesh and make love with you. You must become addicted to their spirit. You must breathe their scent until you are intoxicated. Lost Souls, Poppy Z. Bright. When he dreams, the desolation of reality melts away. His dreams are magical, and he is never alone. Sometimes he wonders if anything has really changed at all, from that innocent-eyed little boy standing under the sakura, before the sakura zukamori, facing something so much bigger and far beyond him, beyond this world, because back then he had felt it as well, the spirits writhing serpent-like beneath their eternal tomb. And now he wishes he had the strength, the will to attempt to break the walls of his own tomb. Hokuto stands in the murky blue-black waters of an anonymous sea, cradling a teeny, sparkling trinket, like one would an infant. The only warmth of light for miles around seems to come from her bundle. The twin smiles innocently as she holds her prize out to Subaru. Look, Subaru, won't Seishan love it? He looks down and acknowledges numbly the still-beating animal heart, coated thick with crystal and ice. It's so cold. She smiles again brightly. Seichan can save it. He's good at fixing things. Then, with her fingers so daintily, she begins to rip the outer visceral tissue, staining her hands a viscous, rusty black as the oracle cleaves open and forbidden arcane liquids flow terribly. The shreds that she tosses to the side transform into shikigami and fly at Subaru with sudden intensity. They plunge through his chest like feathered steel swords, driving him back towards the water's edge, where he can see the depths of the sky reflected. He thinks blandly, how lovely. I could drown in this sky forever, drinking my own blood, and you would never care. There is a sudden hush as he falls into the tranquil sea. Or is it sky? Photographic precision, capturing the moment, and for once he feels free, he feels right, cradled in wings of silk and wind. He can hear Hokuto weeping on the shore when darkness falls. You broke it, Subaru, you broke it. I'm sorry, he cries, and he lets go. The sound of blood gushing through his fingers sings like a sweet symphony in his mind. There is red on black on darker, indelibly poisoned colors unknown to the human eye. They are not characteristic of the spectrum in which temporal hues are categorized, but his eyes perceive only the black and white, the painful jagged collision of fragmented scarlet that separates the two from dangers of destiny. Nestled safe in the darkness of his own home, a little boy with violet eyes sits before the fragrant, calming fireplace, where flower petals are smoldering. He leans to the light and opens a voluptuous book, too far large for his frame. As masterfully flourished ink bleeds into the paint of a fairy tale's pictures, he smiles a faraway sort of smile and watches as the flames weave changelings dancing to hieroglyphs in the smoke. The rose petals crackle as they burn, retelling the tale. On the final day, he stands behind Kamui of the Dragons of Earth, kneeling next to an achingly young fern. It is green and supple, frangible and mournful. He can feel it crying for the years not spent spiraling towards the sun, the days not spent drinking life from a well intimate and subterranean. From the Kamui's battle comes the arcing, a startlingly red splash of blood, which tumbles like a river to the rapacious plant. The cracking, wounded earth laps it up, as does the fern. It begins to grow. Subaru can feel its fronds sensing his tender, willing flesh. They know how delicious he would feel if they could slip under that upper layer of pale epidermis, how his blood would pulse so vividly from the secret place of viscera. He finds himself unable to move as the budding plant encircles his arms and legs, lazily moving about his neck. The vines cut into his skin. He can see the red, but he can't bring himself out of deathly insouciance to care. The fern is no longer a fern. It is the Sakurazuka, and the dark Kamui comes very close to stroke his face. He is not surprised when Kamui becomes instead Sashiru, nor is he surprised when they kiss, and the Sakurazukamori lets him taste his own blood. I'm afraid I've lost the bet, Subaru-kun. He smiles pleasantly, dripping the blood of two souls. I'm very glad of that, Sashiru. Will you marry me, then? The tree folds them together, and they become one. The sound of another human life so near, he reflects, is the most beautiful sensation one could ever hope to experience. He'd wanted the pain to stop, and in doing so he'd invited more pain. Finally, the pain ingrains a permanent scar so lovingly cherished as a memento of sickly depraved dreams that fingers of masochistic doubt wear away to a tainted tableau of something far more gruesome. It is very cold. His fevered breaths come quickly and do nothing to contain the heat that seems to fly from him with every beat of his laboring heart. Somewhere there is a flutter of leathery wings, but it is also dark here, and he can see nothing but the ghastly puffs of crystallized air from his lips. Horribly he realizes he is naked, and curls more tightly into himself, as if convinced he is the only human left in this prison of ice. He hopes he is not, because he is not even certain if he can still be classified as human. Then, oddly, he finds his is in a bed frozen over with ice. On the opposite side there lays a deeply black trench coat that will smell lovely, he knows. Clove cigarettes, flowers and aftershave, and blood. He wants to wrap himself in it, mold himself to it, because he knows it will warm his wintry blue hands so long in waiting. But he doesn't, because it already has an occupant, one he's very much afraid of. A long, lithe, frozen cat sprawls desiccated on it, eyes the color of molten gold laced over with bourbon, which are the only seemingly warm features of it. Subaru has a feeling that if he tries to touch it, the cat will devour him whole. He notices the frosty metal bars caging him in, or is it out? And a block of ice with flowing script etched into it with care, like a well-thought-out holiday card. "Do not feed the animals," it says. "I hate him," he whispers, to the ghosts who wear cobwebs and shadows. He plays minor arpeggios on distant rays of light to convince himself of his transience. These days the shadows are kinder than the light, and he prefers to wake with the moon. At night he plays the game with his enemy in degenerate waltzes, 3-4, 6-8. They write their own libretti from notes of corrosive black obsession, grold old with sometimes love and maybe hate. But the only ones who will listen are the ghosts who call his name tonight. The Sakura Zukamori is being uncharacteristically obliging today. He nips and licks legends of forgotten civilizations on Sumeragi's alabaster and silk skin, possessing them on Myoji like he had the first time those pale hands met his lips, flaring to life the mark of one cursed. Subaru doesn't mind. He can stand the pain if there is pleasure to follow. He can resist the ache in the general direction of his heart if Sashiro-san will let him kiss his own mark down the assassin's skin. He supposes he is being very shallow, but can't seem to remember why they stopped doing this in the first place. They are on a very wide stage, hollowed out and filled to the brim with petals the color of blush. There is a sole light, but it is not directed on them. It is looking out over the darkened seats occupied by the spectral audience. The gold inlay on the ceiling seems to blind Subaru as Sashiro hovers over him, tearing apart every fiber of his being with treacherous provocation. He knows that this is wrong, crazily dangerous, an act of vilest perfidy. He knows, and yet through the haze of his fast-approaching breathless climax, there are no standing repulsions of hate in his mind, none of the protections of the lies he harbors in his clandestine gardens, only the words he withholds from the sanctimonious world for fear of unlocking the windows in his eyes, so easily shattered. "I love you, Sashiro-san." "Only you," came the equally breathless answer, or was it an echo? "Forever, mine," of what he so wanted to hear. From the audience cavity, there is a lonely sound of someone clapping. She has green eyes which slowly spill over with tears. They are facing each other, mockingly mirrored in that left eyes have suffered gouging, and now are nothing but milky white orbs of silver infinity. The younger one slouches on the dusty ground, unattended marionette doll as the elder examines his pain with a soft smile. The man watching walks forward boldly then. The figure on the ground looks so vulnerable and delicate that the onlooker would fear the young man would break like a sculpture of crystal if so much is touched. He doesn't, of course. He flinches, however, when his counterpart reaches out a hand to him. The hand comes to his cheek, cupping it so warmly and temptingly that he must use all of his willpower not to lean into the contact. So deceptively kind, the words twist the knife in an old wound. "Why are you crying, Subaru-kun?" But he hadn't noticed that he was. At the base of the Sakurazuka, he can see himself curled up, softly keening as the trails of funeral processions dry on his cheeks. The pentagrams on the back of his hands are raw and still weeping down his wrist. Unconsciously, his lips seek out the wound, kissing the cursed mark as he licks at the blood. Without bothering to look, he knows this is the final day and that Kamui is lost. The only sound is that of the wind sighing through the ruined branches of the once flowering sakura tree. Still formidable in its dark aura that seems to shield the Sumeragi from the dangers of predestination's end. The perfect silence rewrites his shameful love affair with death, and the heartsick malady spinning out a web of bejeweled damsels that he never gave a fuck about. He is so tired. He feels that he fought the final battle. But he could care less about the world now. He wonders if it has ended. He prays it will hurry up and do so. On the other side of the tree, sitting at an elegantly ornamented table, is Kamui. He sips vanilla tea and ambrosia, smiling with the demon who wears the mask of the dark Kamui's skin. Further off, Hokuto is playing croquet with Sashiro, and a group of mummified skeletons dressed in black sings a requiem a cappella. They are all in a forest painted with every possible shade of green, and it is now absolutely silent. Watching from afar, he wonders if he should rescue Kamui from the demon or play croquet with his sister. She has been abroad for so long, and Sashiro-san is laughing again. He's missed him. A thread of unease shivers up his spine. How odd that he is not a part of this picture. But he is. There is a mound of fallen sakura petals he recognizes, the hollows in the pearly white skull's cheeks, the high brow and grimacing mouth, the envious voids where emeralds used to bleed salty love. Suddenly he feels very sad. He realizes that this is his funeral and he can't ever see Hokuto, Sashiro, or Kamui again. Beneath the tree, it begins to rain. He feels it running hotly down his cheeks, like the tears of maudlin schoolgirls whose hearts he'd broken by a tilt of his head. The Sakurazuka offers him an embrace, and he welcomes it, allowing it to steal his corpse from his spirit. Blood. Blood everywhere. So much of it. The world is painted red, he thinks giddily. For a moment he feels so joyous. He had thought his wish had been granted. His hateful wish, conceived of blood and betrayal and bitter love and luscious hate. The happiness is overpowering. That is, before the blood begins to soak his sleeve, it crawls like a swarm of crimson insects up the white exterior of his trench coat. It seeps into his skin. He wonders why the source is not his chest, and the dream sequence breaks like the paint from a careless artist, staining the ill-treated canvas with pain and horrible, inexplicable desperation. When did the world turn so black? Daggers of fear and agony lodge in his heart, threatening to implode the organ. He is being left alone, again. He wants to scream and pound his pain into the world so selfish in its violent, sacrosanct, poisonously fearic battles. But he is afraid to disturb the hapless spontaneity of the arrangement of the folds of Sakura Zukamori's coat, never having realized how damningly beautiful a life is on the brink of its extinguishment. He wants to say, I love you, maybe, or I hate you, but the words are locked inside the prison of his ribs, jailed by the solidity of his flesh, and years of bitterly nursed anger has worn them to bare indentations in the shadow of his mute soul. The former now seems too sentimental, the latter too paltry. Superfluous words spill from his puppet's mouth, traitor breath stalling for time he never had. So weary he wants to die, but can only hear the ragged breaths of his muffled sobs, a spiteful reminder of how very much alive it is. Take it from me, gods, take this life. I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it. I hate it, I hate, I hate, I hate. If only he could cut open his heart for Sashiro, because tens of thousands of those exquisitely truthful words choked him in a lie. If only he could spill out every last particle of his being so that Sashiro would know that his tongue would not speak. If he could hear that beloved, darkling, murderous heart now reply to his own silent one. If only I could forgive you. But all he is allowed is a cold spot behind his dear, heartless assassin, Paramore, and all the tears of heartbreaking sky for his passing. You never say the words I'm expecting to hear, do you? I love you, Subaru-kun, he had promised. Or was it the echo of his diseased heart? Only you, speaking what he had so wanted to hear. The end. If you'll note at the beginning, I don't have an author for this story. I found this back in early 2003 and copied it to my hard drive from fanfiction.net. Further searching that I have tried, both on fanfiction.net itself, and on the internet in general, has yielded nothing. As far as I can tell, the story never existed, which is very sad because I think it's interesting and I would like to read other work by this author. If you happen to know how I can contact this person or find out more information, please tell me. I've tried everything I can. Thanks for listening.